who has the first question?
I've got one.
Go ahead, Jovan. Yeah, please.
At the, you know, your business is focused at the intersection of sports, business, and media.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you're building that out and you're looking for long-term strategic partnerships, what are some things that you look out for so that you're not just getting some early wins, but you're actually developing some infrastructure there? And what's the timing and the sequencing like and kind of announcing too soon not to sabotage your efforts?
Yeah, so it depends on what stage you're at. So when you get to a position where I'm in, I have so many options, opportunities, and touches of favor. My job is to evaluate either the distribution internally in my businesses or externally to the network of people that I have an overlap agreement with. If anybody would like an overlap agreement, I'll send it to you. It's a memorialization of how we'd like to help each other. It's just a non-binding memorialization. But what it does is it's a conduit to collaboration, not a binding agreement of separation and litigation. And so what most people do is they create a referral agreement that says, you're going to pay me 10%, I'm going to pay you 10%. And then time, emotion, and value changes. And I can't pay you the 10%. So then I hide from you. And then you hate me.
Yeah.
And I hate myself because circumstances change, not my intention. So by creating a document that reflects a verbal, written, implied agreement and make it non-binding. So I go ahead and make a referral to you, but it ends up it was a friend of mine,
yeah,
but they couldn't afford you. So you ended up, because they're a friend of mine, doing it for free. And then you couldn't pay me a referral fee because you were doing me a favor. But instead of creating some sort of problem that I think you gypped me or ripped me off, we all feel comfortable because it was set up under the guise of memorializing, remembering how we'd said we were going to try according to the circumstances of the day to help each other. And so for me, my job is to take all options, opportunities, even from you guys, and distribute them and build a big enough network where I can help everybody. Now, if you're in a limited situation, you have to align three things. What skills, knowledge, and desire do both parties have? What's doing well, what's stable, and what do you think is doing well? And then create a timing and risk tolerance analysis of how well it's aligned with the timing and risk tolerance so that although you may not have a distribution channel like mine to say, man, you know, someone came up to me with an AI thing and I was like, look, I can help you. I know the lady that created Alexa. Let me have her look at it so I know where to distribute it to or know how I can help you. Because he was looking for like $100,000. Well, it wouldn't help either of us if I just said, oh, I'll give you $100,000. Sounds like a great idea.
Sure. Right.
But I will, and the people in my network take the time to learn what's needed, if it's worth $100,000 or $1 million or 10 million or zero at this time. And so for any individuals, we need to know our timing and risk tolerance. We need to know what's stable, what's doing well, and what we think is doing well. And then we need to know what capabilities that we have and other people have that are synergistic, supplementary to one another, according to what's stable, what's doing well, or what you think is doing well. Too many people don't get the alignment and they don't have the timing and risk tolerance. If you don't know your timing, it's like perceived value and bottom line. If you don't know your timing and risk tolerance beforehand, you'll never be happy. Mm-hmm. If you don't know your perceived value and bottom line before you just negotiate price, you'll never be satisfied. And, you know, real estate is the king of this, right? What is perceived value, by the way? Perceived value is based off of one thing, your comfortability and confidence in the articulation of that price. It's perceived. So when I tell you I'm $100,000 to speak, that's my perceived value. And I'm very comfortable and confident in telling you that. That doesn't mean it's my bottom line.
Sure.
There's charitable organizations that I still speak for free to. But when they call me, I tell them, they'll say, well, how much are you? I'll say, $100,000. This happened to me with the Boy Scouts of America. They called and they said, hey, we like you. We're looking between you and Mike Tirico from ESPN. How much are you? I said, $100,000. They're like, you're more than Mike Tirico, but he's more well-known. I said, well, what do you want to hire us for? Are you trying to sell tickets? Because if you're trying to sell tickets, I would use Mike Tirico. He's more well-known. No, we're trying to raise more money. I said, well, I'd hire me. I said, in fact, if you pay me $100,000, I will. What'd you raise last year? They said $1.2 million. I said, you pay me $100,000, I'll guarantee I'll raise over $2 million. Guaranteed or don't pay me. Now, little did they know, I already knew my perceived value is $100,000. That doesn't change. But little did they know, my bottom line was zero. Because I wanted to speak for the Boys and Girls Club, right? And the Boy Scouts of America, sorry, but I wanted to speak for them anyway. And so they came back to me. This is something I would have done for free, but because I understand my perceived value and bottom line, they said, oh, we only have a budget of $75,000. Would you guarantee that? I'm like, of course, I guarantee 100, I'll guarantee 75. Yeah. So you'll do it for 75. They're thanking me for something I would have done for zero. And I guaranteed it because I would have done it for zero. So if I didn't live up to my word, I got what I wanted to get out of it anyway, my bottom line.
Yeah.
And too many people don't know their perceived value bottom line, or you don't know your timing and risk tolerance. What does that mean? Think about a lottery ticket. Anybody here buy lottery tickets? My wife's buying them all the time. They're $2. I think they're still $2. But you know your timing and risk tolerance. You know if you invest $2, it's a 1 in billion chance that you, on average, win $500 million. And you know that Saturday at 8 p.m., the timing of it, you're going to know whether you lost your $2 or won $500 million. So when you lose your $2, which is most likely for every single person that plays the lottery, you are disappointed on Saturday, but you're not resentful and guilty. It has no limitation of your future business decisions that you made a mistake because it was aligned with your timing and risk tolerance. So all of the business decisions I make, I know my timing and risk tolerance. Do I get disappointed? All the time. But as long as it's falling within the context of the timing and risk tolerance that I gave it, I'm disappointed, but I'm never resentful and guilty. I'm never limiting my self-image. I'm never limiting my imagination of what I can do, what I will do, and who I can become because I took a chance that and lost on that chance, but according to the statistical assessment that I gave it, the chance that I was looking at.
Yeah, it's a great way to answer that. I think it's that memorandum that memorializes the agreement.
Non-binding. Knowing that circumstances change.
Yeah, it kind of helps define the terms up front, which sets the expectation, and it also gives you an ability to maybe solidify the value creation that you're putting out. It's so hard to get paid when you're coalition building, connecting the dots. You know, there's no way to monetize that, and I think it's, you know, very few can find a way to do
it. Especially because of technology today. When I started this, it was much more cumbersome and difficult. Now, like, I do deals with everybody. Like, I have a dentist, this is a true story. I have a dentist in Charlotte who moved here and like, hey, you know a lot of people, Dave. If you know any of the families, send them to me. And I said, awesome. Like, I'll send you a Starbucks gift certificate for everyone you send to me. I'm like, cool. So I typed an email just saying, hey, I just want to memorialize so I could remember that you're a dentist for children, a family dentist, and anyone I send you, you're going to send me a Starbucks. I said to him, hey, I'll give you 20%. I charge $100,000 to speak. I'll give you 20% for bringing me any speaking engagement. Mm. And so here we go. Now, I have had my own dentist get me the American Dental Association keynote speech for $100,000 on a deal that was very similar where he gave me for every family this restaurant that's really In-N-Out Burger in California, yeah. These gift certificates and t-shirts to give away. But anyway, someone came up to me, said, hey, I just moved here. Do you know a dentist? You know everybody. And I'm like, hold on. I searched on my phone, dentist in Charlotte. And the guy came up. I texted him. I'm like, dude, you know, meet these people. And I said, don't forget the Starbucks card. No, I don't care. But I would have just forgot who it was if I didn't create the system and missed an opportunity to add credibility, add to the neighborhood, add value of people who want to help each other and know people to help each other. So those overlap agreements have much more than just an open-ended architecture built off of trust and intention and also the reality that circumstances change. One thing is certain. The instant after we come to an agreement of any time, this is personal or professional. So you could use this on your children, your spouse, whoever. The minute I tell you we have an agreement, written, implied, oral, or even with consideration, that means payment. One thing is certain. The instant we agree, time, emotion, and value changes, which means the deal changes, which means we need a flexible document and understanding and intention that we're going to allow the deal to change and keep the intention that we had. Very good. All right. Next question. Question.
Joel.
No, for Dave. Good to see you again.
Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
So you're, it's been a year.
By the way, anyone like this? My friend made this.
So it's been a year. It's been a year since you've been a chairman at the Napoleon Hill Foundation. What is the biggest thing you've learned as a chairman this year?
So as chairman of Napoleon Hill is, I thought I knew the content of Napoleon Hill, and I always wanted to be part of that legacy. I want to be the person who puts all the people whose brands are at jeopardy because of all the noise that exists, so much content. But most of the content was built off of Napoleon Hill, like Bob Berg. Like, I had no idea Go Giver was created by Napoleon Hill. Now, he wrote a whole book about it, explained it, et cetera. But the concept of a go giver, it's in Outwitting the Devil. He talks about being a go giver in 1930s. So I had no idea what I had gotten myself into as far as, for me, the inspiration of amplifying, you know, this incredible work of, and it's, most of it's not public, but this incredible content that can continue to give people a framework. It was kind of like Bucky Fuller,
yeah.
The general principles. Like, I'm going to Google those.
Right.
Right. There's no doubt, because I was like, wow, these guys had these frameworks that are simple, that are so applicable today. One thing about the poor dad who was a Stanford PhD in history, one of the things that I encourage people to do about history is study history for one purpose, to understand human nature, because human nature never changes. So if you study history for the facts, you're an idiot. But if you study history for human nature, you're a genius, because human nature never changes. And if you really want to make a lot of money or help people and have fun in your life, learn human nature.
It's like,
because that's what I teach.
Like Ray Dalio, right? They kind of follow the currencies and stuff.
Yeah. And all of that is from the seminal thought leader, Napoleon Hill, sparked the interest in how the mind, body, and soul, how mindset, heart set, and hand set work together to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have fun. And he wasn't shy about it. If you think Robert is tough on education, go listen to Outwitting the Devil. What he talked about education, religion, you know, that's why they didn't publish it till 2011, because literally they, like, he's afraid of being, you know, Charlie Kirk off or whatever, yeah. Robert,
yeah.
Is.
Yeah.
Right. Napoleon Hill and his wife were very fearful of what they were going to do to him if he published that book.
Wow.
He even talked about tobacco. He went after the tobacco companies in 1937.
Whoa.
He's like, this will be one of the biggest, dumbest things in America, tobacco. We need to stop selling tobacco in America. It's going to ruin our children. It's going to cause more of an expense than it'll ever generate an income. It's going to kill people.
Like Rachel Carson.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to hear that in 1937. And the tobacco mafia probably would not have been happy.
What's your plan for the next 5 to 10 years?
I love it. So what's my plan for the next 5 to 10 years? My plan for the next 5 to 10 years and the rest of my life is, one, to make sure I'm consistent in my non-negotiable behavior. So 12 hours a day, I'm non-negotiable in my behavior. Minimum of 7 hours on my sleep, minimum of an hour on my health, minimum of an hour with my family, minimum of time on my finance, faith, and the study of time and relativity. So my mission is to do those non-negotiables in the next period of my life, because I know that 90% of the exponentiality of outcomes that are in my benefit, promoting, protecting, loving, and perfecting me, will be derived from that non-negotiable behavior. If I sleep right, if I take care of my health, if I take care of my family, if I take care of my finance every day, my faith, the study of time, and the study of relativity or meaning of that time, that I'm going to be so aligned with my divine direction automatically. The other thing I'm going to do is to work through circumstances and become better at prioritizing according to circumstances the other 12 hours of awake time. So I want to become better over the next 5 or 10 years of being able to shorten the distance of resistance that's created when circumstances are not aligned with where I want to be, or the evidence isn't there that I'm going to get to where I'm going to be, or the evidence is contrary that I'm going to get to where I want to be. I want to get better and better at this negotiable behavior, circumstantial behavior, and be able to quickly shorten the distance of resistance when circumstances suck, and just say to myself, somehow, I know this sucks, but it's just a matter of minutes and moments until I'm going to figure out how it doesn't suck, how this is helping me, how bankruptcy helped me, or how a deal not going through helped me, or, you know, somebody attacking me helped me. This is my goal for the rest of my life, but specifically for the next 5 to 10 years. Great question. All right, who's next? This recording, so don't worry.
How do you find your alignment?
Yeah, great question. How do I find my alignment? So first, in order to find your alignment, you need to know your direction, your trajectory. I call it your divine direction. And so you can't get aligned if you don't know what you're aligning with. So for me, the divine direction is created by, one, my values, two, my daily practices, three, my execution of my daily practices and my values. And then what's going to incentivize me to stay aligned for the sake of what? not attaching my emotions to an outcome saying I'll be happy when, but this alignment of incentivizing myself for the sake of building a community center in Africa or helping a million kids eat or whatever it is that I'm aligned with. And so in order to have alignment in my life, I'm aligning my values, which are gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and effective communication with my daily practices, non-negotiable and negotiable, paid for, unpaid for, planned, unplanned in my sleep. And I'm aligning these daily practices, knowing what I want in alignment with my divine direction, aligning the meaning of the past, setbacks, failures, mistakes, defining moments, historical relevances. I'm constantly aligning the meaning, the lessons from the mistakes I made with where I want to be or better. Then I ask myself, who can I help? Right? Because the fastest way to get to where you want to be is finding some, not only finding someone that's already there, asking them for directions, which is why you guys are at Aspire. These people just give you directions. Andrew will give you those directions. Eddie, I will give you directions. Robert will give you directions. Russell Brunson will go on in a little while, give you directions of where you want to be or better. But you also want to find people, which is why we're here, that you can help get to where you want to, where they want to be. So knowing your who, then knowing how by using time, and then knowing your now. People talk all the time about being present. What does it really mean being present? It's you know what to do now and know what to do next. You want to be really productive, know what to do now and know what to do next all the time. It is the antidote to feeling overwhelmed. It's the antidote to procrastination. It's impossible to feel overwhelmed or to procrastinate if you know what to do now and know what to do next. Plus, 100% of the things you do now get done. So it's statistically the most successful thing you can do. Then after prioritization, the fifth daily practice is applying your why. You already have your why. Don't ask me, Mr. Meltzer, I'm looking for my why. I'm searching for my why. I want to know my purpose. The thoughts about your purpose are your purpose. You are already your why. You're interfering with your why. Let's figure out together how to apply your why, shorten the distance of resistance by what you're doing to interfere with your why. I categorize my behaviors. Is this behavior aligned with where I want to be or better in my divine direction, or is this behavior interfering with it?
And would you say that ultimately creates your frequency, and that's like your elevates. Frequency playbook?
Yep. So that ultimately will, like a muscle, develop the frequency that I have, notating that my frequency gives me an awareness, which actually is counterintuitive. But the more I work that muscle, the easier things get. Which isn't really counterintuitive, because the more you work a muscle, if you start at 100 pounds and you keep working that muscle, 100 pounds becomes easy, right? You're already at 200 pounds. But the first time you lifted 100 pounds, it hurt like shit, right? The next, you didn't want to do it anymore. Why? Because things happen very slowly in behaviors, then all of a sudden. But you got to work your muscles. And that's why they're called daily practices. And then you figure out your own execution model in this alignment with your values, your daily practices. My execution model is to capture every one of your names, emails, and phone numbers so I can help you. And notate maybe how I can help you. Join my group, come to Friday free Friday trainings, Napoleon Hill free trainings, whatever it is I can do to help you. My mission is to capture everybody that I meet and figure out how I can help them, get their email and phone number, and then distribute it internally or externally, and then execute on it or redistribute it. That's my entire model based upon my values and my daily practices. So if anyone wants to give me their name, phone number, so I can help them, just make sure you find Nick or Marissa, wherever they are. Give them your name, phone number, and email address so I can help you. Or if you'd like mine, because you don't want my emails or text messages, you just want my cell phone number in your arsenal or my email, let's write it down right now. You got a book, you got a pen. I'm going to give you my email address. Only thing I ask with my phone number is my cell phone, call me. I might lose the text. You could text me, but I'm not guaranteeing I'm going to figure it out because I get so many because people are chicken shit. So call me and leave me a voice message. I promise you, I have 5 minutes for everybody here. A minimum of 5 minutes to help you. So my cell phone number is 858-688-3294. Here, dial that real quick. Dial that real quick. Go ahead. You dial that real quick. This is my cell phone. You dial it. Let's see if it comes up. And then you leave me a message, okay? Right? That's my cell phone, right? Leave me a message. Okay. So alignment is extremely important. It goes along with timing and risk tolerance. It goes along with perceived value and bottom line. And so when people aren't aligned with your values, go ahead and put them in a different bucket of maybe some of the time or almost never. Don't put them in the all the time. I just bucket people really quickly. I determine, are they someone who's going to be all the time aligned with me or almost all the time, or it's some of the time, which is fine, or almost never. So then I know how much time to spend on somebody because I want to spend the majority of my time visiting with almost all the time people. I used to answer the phone at dinner time, and my wife shook my world one time. She said, why do you spend more time with people that you don't know or barely know and don't care about compared to the people that you love the most? Put the fucking phone down. And I did. Remember, your visiting time is really important. And the biggest problem with having enough time for our family is we spend too much time visiting with people we don't know or barely know or we shouldn't be visiting with. If you want to be efficient, most phone calls should last less than 5 minutes and most meetings or interviews should last less than 20 minutes, with exceptions, of course. Sometimes you got a really big opportunity and you need to visit more. So there's no hard and fast rules. It's just objectives to create a greater statistical success or efficiencies. That's why I tell you, what do I tell you? I'll give anybody here 5 minutes. And when you want 5 minutes from me, you're going to say, can I call you? I'm going to say, sure. You're going to say when? I'm going to say this weekend. You're going to say what time? I'm not going to answer. Because the minute I schedule a time, it becomes very expensive. I have a networking group on Mondays. Thousands of people are in it. We only charge for two reasons. One, it's only $500 for the year because if you can't afford it, you're not ready for the group. And two, if you can't afford it but don't want to join, it means you're not ready. You're not going to be engaged and we don't want you in there anyway. But the funny thing about Monday's meetings, and I haven't missed one for years, is that nobody knows what time it is till Sunday. Why is that? Because I'm studying my time and I'm seeing where the least expensive time is for me. And since it's a world group, that it may be 4 a.m. Pacific time, that's cheapest for me. But if I told everybody here, and I'm a man of my word, and try to be at all times, not all times am I actually living up to my word, but I try to be. If I told you 8 a.m. Pacific time, every Monday we'll have a call. You can watch the replays if you can't make it. There's no way I can make that. I guarantee I'm trying to make such a well-developed plan that God's going to laugh at me and I'll probably miss the first Monday. So non-time and schedule time have different quantitative values in what you do. And so I use non-time with all the people, and that's how I have enough time to do things that other people can't believe I have enough time to do, like to give 5 minutes of time to anyone, because it's going to be my non-time. And you might be talking to me when I'm on the toilet, but it's my non-time. Sorry to say. So I've had someone go like, what was that? I'm like, I don't know. We got barking spiders in California. It's like the curious thing.
That's what you came up with. Don't be a dick.
Exactly. I just make sure it's never FaceTime. You never know what I'm wearing. And that just make you nauseous. All right. Yes, sir.
So just a quick question on that. You're giving your time to identify. How do you filter for that? Because How do you filter for that? Because you only have so much time. You're obviously super generous with others. How are you? Obviously, there's a lot of people that want time. How do you filter for that?
Yeah, so a lot of people do. I average about 12 5-minute phone calls a day, 7 days a week. You would think that's an hour because I limit to 5 minutes, but it's really not because I can handle most people very quickly within a minute or two. So it's probably on average about a half an hour a day, 7 days a week, on average. If your mission is to empower other people and you don't have a minimum of 30 minutes a day, 7 days a week for your purpose, your mission, then you're full of shit. I do those calls for the sake of helping people make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and I can move the needle in minutes for people by giving them advice or introducing them to people that can move the needle for them. And because I move the needle for those people who I'm referring them to, they're going to want to move the needle as well because it's a neighborhood. That's why that group is so important. It just provides this neighborhood of people that want to help each other and know people that help each other. And so I have enough time for anything I want. Freedom is the capability of doing what you want, when you want, with who you want, for as long as you want. And I have that capability.
So do you cut out all like coffees when I'm like all that stuff?
Yeah, no going to coffee. Yeah. I got a video on that. It was one of my first videos that ever went viral because people got like, what do you mean? I visit with people, but I don't need to drive to coffee to go visit with you, especially now that technology is how it is. I'm one of the weirdos. I don't even like Zoom. Like, I like phone calls because they're efficient. I can do other things while I have you on the call. You know, I can teach you guys later on, not today, but I have a mechanism about multitasking. I don't believe in multitasking. I believe in understanding how the mind works and resetting the mind and gathering data to multiple things by having a central focal point. So if I was multitasking, and I do it all the time, I'm on a lot of the interviews you'll see with me, I'm doing my emails or texting people because I'm always centered on the conversation. And so I'm always going back here. So I'm always gathering enough data to carry the conversation, but I gather enough data to go ahead and slowly email. But I'm going back here. And if I want to do three things, it goes 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1. Because this is where I have to stay focused. This is where the efficiency and exponentiality of productivity occur by understanding how, because why can I do that? Because thought moves faster than time. The speed of thought moves so fast, right? We can go back 100 million years, all of us, by shutting our eyes, and it'll take like 3 seconds for all of us to go 100 million years. So understanding the speed of thought is faster than the actual time, I can use the speed of thought and gather enough data to do 3, 4, and as you practice this, 5, 6, 7 things that appear to be at one man-made constructive time, but they're not. It's just that speed of thought is not working on the same linear time frame as man-made constructive time.